You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The endless parade of time. Who can say what fruits the future will see ripen? We can only keep looking towards
tomorrow's world with Isla Christensen and Stella Huggins on 95BFM.
For the first episode of 2022, Stella and Isla interview Dr. Georgia Piggott, and she is a researcher from the University of Auckland School of Environment, about what net zero emissions actually mean. They explore this through the example of Beijing's 2022 Winter Olympics, with additional comments from Professor Justin Hodgkiss, the co-director of the MacDiarmid Institute for Advanced Materials and Nanotechnology, and a lecturer at the Victoria University of Wellington.
Hi, Earthlings.
Is it too late into the game to say Happy New Year?
Well, it feels great to be back at BFM, albeit virtually, as we are both bunkered down with COVID. But we're back and we're making more episodes of Tomorrow's World,
the segment where we discuss science and society and how we all play a role in the future of the Earth, or at least our experience on it.
I'm Isla.
And I'm Stella.
Last year, we discussed topics such as Elon Musk's Neuralink brain chip, alternative meats, the future of our oceans, and looked at the credibility of some viral science TikToks.
This week, we've been inspired by the Winter Olympics.
I'll preface by saying that we have not become athletes in isolation.
Today, we're here to question the credibility of the Games' carbon neutrality.
In fact, running the Games consumed an estimated 2.8 million cubic meters of water. Now, that's enough to fill 1,000 Olympic-sized swimming pools.
The Games Committee reported that the production of artificial snow would produce no more than 3,000 tonnes of CO2.
But is no more actually really necessary? Or how can we actually validate the 600,000 clean development mechanism credits purchased by the Beijing Olympic Committee?
To provide more insight on the topic, we invited Dr. Georgia Piggott onto the show.
Georgia is an environmental social scientist with more than 15 years of experience in research, teaching, and public policy development on climate change and sustainability.
We started by asking her to introduce her field of research.
I'm a lecturer in the School of Environment at the University of Auckland, and I work on climate mitigation policy primarily. I'm particularly interested in how we address fossil fuels in our climate system and energy transitions. I think we have this massive transition to make in response to climate change, and that's both a challenging and interesting thing to look into as a researcher.
With the Games, what stood out for Stella and I was the fact that the Winter Games were being hosted in China, somewhere that perhaps, especially at the time of year, doesn't have, you know, all the snow and things like that. So a lot of energy was being put into the Games. But I think most importantly, for people who maybe don't understand this claim of carbon neutrality, what is, you know, the claims or the carbon financing?
Right now we have companies all around the world, countries as well, claiming that they're going net zero. These Olympics are just one small microcosm of what's happening all over the place. We have oil companies claiming they're net zero. We have Olympics claiming they're net zero. And so I think it's really important to understand what that means. So I think the thing to understand about net zero is there's two pieces of it, right? There's the net and the zero. So zero, I think, is probably pretty intuitive to most people. We need to cut our emissions down. We need to be doing things that emit less so that we are producing less greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. But that's really challenging to do completely. So this is where the net piece of the puzzle comes in. So when companies or countries or anyone who's interested in reducing their emissions can't quite get it down to zero, they look for ways to reduce emissions elsewhere in order to claim that their activities are in some net zero. And typically what that looks like is perhaps going and planting trees that are going to suck out the equivalent of carbon emissions to what that company or what the Olympics is producing. So that, you know, on the balance books, it's zero, but they don't have to necessarily themselves get it down to zero. But trees tend to be a big one and often feature in a lot of plans. And I know in the case of the Olympics were how they did offset their emissions. So essentially, Yes, there are a few different issues. Number one is a tree takes longer to suck those emissions than avoiding those emissions in the first place, because by not putting them up in the atmosphere today, you've got all of that time that it takes for the tree to grow to suck it back down. And speed matters in climate change, because we are now getting to a point that we need to act quickly. And so, you know, avoiding those emissions should be the number one goal, not planting the tree. You know, they did a lot of good things as well. It's just the case that we need to think pretty critically about, you know, are there better ways of avoiding emissions in the Olympics or in anything else we do in society so that we're not relying on these offsets. For those who don't know, the Olympics Committee has also committed to reducing emissions for all Olympics going forward. So they're all going to be carbon neutral from 2030 onwards. And so, you know, we did see a lot of investment in new technologies and interesting things that were part of a genuine effort to reduce emissions. The problem is it's very hard to hold Olympics somewhere that you don't get a lot of snow without using a lot of energy. It's also hard to hold Olympics places that don't have a lot of pre-existing facilities because you have to build them. That uses a lot of emissions. And so it's hard to say that the Olympics themselves were green Olympics just because they did this offsetting. I think that, you know, questions could be raised if we wanted to kind of reflect critically on it about, are there decisions that could have been made earlier in the decision-making process about who hosted the Olympics and where the Olympics were hosted that could have saved us a lot of emissions? Was it perhaps not the right location if climate was in the forefront of your mind when you were making the decision about Olympics? Were there maybe places that could have hosted a little bit more easily? If we put, you know, using existing facilities and reducing emissions that way as a key factor in decision making, we would both save money, have more economically efficient Olympics, as well as energy efficient Olympics. So I think that you can think about, where are we making these decisions? When are we making these decisions? Can we kind of avoid making more damaging decisions early on so that we don't end up in this position of needing to offset as much?
For me, what stood out was the celebration of Beijing being the first ever place to host both the summer and the Winter Games. And you have expertise in the area of the social aspect of climate change. Why do you think that this was celebrated, and was the excessive production of artificial snow, was it actually worth it in the context of making a carbon neutral Games?
It's celebrated for the same reason everybody celebrates getting the Olympics, right? Everybody sees it as a source of national pride. I do think there's kind of this question about, are we going to put some physical limits on where we host Olympics in the future? Can we heat up cold places and run a summer Olympics there, you know, in the middle of winter? Do these things need to factor in at all? So it's an interesting question. I don't think that these climate factors were a major feature, because as I understand, not many people really wanted these Olympics. We're running into this problem, like I said, of Olympics becoming this like very expensive thing, and unless you wanted to do it for like national pride or other reasons, becoming a harder sell for a lot of places to take on the task of the Olympics.
So in terms of people who are listening, or myself, Stella and I, what could we do to support these movements or to make a smaller change from our own perspective, who aren't sitting on the board of the Games?
That's a really interesting question. The next step is, okay, well, we want you to take it a little bit further and really prioritize low emissions Games, not just kind of offsetting the emissions afterwards. Maybe the thing to do is for people to kind of, around the time that that decision is being made, band together with other people to come up with some sort of campaign to pressure the organization to pick the lower emissions option. But you also have to kind of think about this stuff in context. So symbolically, the Olympics are really, really important, right? Matters what happens on this global stage and what it symbolizes in terms of climate change. They have such a long and storied history, right? And so I couldn't come here and talk about how, like, maybe we just get rid of the Olympics altogether. That would reduce emissions. It's such a, you know, important part of what makes us human. So we have to think about these trade-offs. You know, how do we hold an event that naturally has a lot of emissions, but also how do we make sure we do that in a responsible way?
Perhaps something that people could do is look to see if they are audited or if they're somehow certified. How would people do that?
It depends on who they bought their offsets from at the moment as to who's certifying them. But the problem is because we have these different certification bodies, it's not always clear. It's not always clear what net zero means generally. There's not always clear standards about what is and isn't counted as emissions for net zero and where in the supply chain we stop counting. And so there are now groups trying to push for this. And this is kind of an effort that people could get behind, is much clearer standards around what net zero looks like, how we can kind of judge places as net zero or not net zero. It's a difficult difficult thing when you think of all of the countries and companies claiming that they're going net zero. We don't have the space to plant trees for that many organizations to do that at our current rate of emissions. And we definitely don't have the resources to track it all and follow it all up. Have we avoided the emissions to begin with? That should be the forefront question. Net zero can be the thing we do after we've asked that question. But, you know, have we done everything to avoid the emissions to begin with? And I think that you guys have hit the nail on the head with the Olympics being a case of, is hosting a Winter Olympics in a warm place the best way to avoid emissions? Yeah. Probably not.
So there we have it. I'm not sure if we can start handing out gold medals for sustainability, but there is a lot more to think about than net zero.
And Georgia has highlighted the importance of trade-offs and how social, technological, economic, and environmental aspects all need to be considered.
Speaking of technology, Tomorrow's World received a statement from Professor Justin Hodgkiss, co-director of the McDermott Institute and an expert in energy and sustainability issues, regarding the need to place net zero claims in a wider context. Professor Hodgkiss says the gross carbon footprint for the Olympics was relatively low due to a combination of innovation and other circumstances. The Olympics used entirely renewable electricity from wind and solar, but this arguably needs to be seen in the context of China's wider dependence on coal. If the renewable electricity was diverted from elsewhere in the grid, then surely more coal will have been used as a result of the Olympics that is not counted. Nevertheless, the Olympics featured other innovations in terms of energy-efficient construction and retrofitting, along with efficient cooling technologies. However, a large part of the real emissions savings resulted from circumstances rather than good planning and technology. No international spectators could travel to attend the Olympics, eliminating a significant chunk of emissions that would otherwise be expected. And after adding up the carbon cost of all of these aspects, the Olympics was made carbon neutral by offsetting, that is, planting enough trees to soak up the equivalent amount of carbon. Planting trees is no doubt a critical part of climate action, but it is dangerous to think that simply offsetting to carbon neutrality will be enough. Trees do not store carbon forever. The goal should really be to make real gross emissions as close to zero as possible so that tree planting can bring the sustained negative net emissions that we need.
Cool, 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 cool. I mean, literally.
That's all we had for you this week, Earthlings.
Stay critical.
Looks like everything's gonna be all right.
Tomorrow's World with Isla Christensen and Stella Huggins on 95BFM.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.